The reading today is taken from John, the Gospel of John, and it can be found on page 1052 in the church Bibles in front of you. So we're reading from John chapter 4, verses 1 to 26. The Pharisees heard that Jesus was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John, although in fact it was not Jesus who baptized, but his disciples. When the Lord learned of this, he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. Now he had to go through Samaria, so he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from his journey, sat down by the well. It was about the sixth hour. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink?" For the Jews did not associate with Samaritans. Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his flocks and herds?" Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." He told her, "Go, call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she replied. Jesus said to her, "You are right when you said you have no husband. The fact is you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true." "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on the mountain, but you Jews claim that the space where we must worship is in Jerusalem." Jesus declared, "Believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming, and has now come, when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for they are the kind of worshippers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshippers must worship him in spirit and in truth." The woman said, "I know that Messiah, called Christ, is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us." Then Jesus declared, "I who speak to you am he."
Good morning, everybody. My name is Eric, and I suppose I could be one of the more nice ministers here, and we wish the Western Sydney Wanderers all the best this afternoon. There are three reasons why you probably will win. Firstly, what good comes from Brisbane anyway? Secondly, you can't choke 2 years in a row. Thirdly, you're not the Eels, so there's a good chance you'll finish it off. So all the best, guys. I want to begin by talking about a tragedy that happened last month. It concerns a 49-year-old woman who, when you look at her carefully curated Instagram feed, you'll see that she is a one percenter, a gold-plated member of the international elite. When you look at her photos there, you see her with her boyfriend Mick Jagger. You see her waiting for her private helicopter with her boyfriend as they head off to their island retreat, the Island of Mystique. You see her with her gold jewelry in the top right, lounging around with her designer sunglasses. In the middle, according to Instagram, she was on a private plane with her $5,000 Louis Vuitton handbag as a footrest. She said this to a reporter, "I always say luxury is a state of mind because for me it's legroom, it's a beautiful view, it's great food at a great restaurant." And the sad thing is that last month, she chose her favorite scarf in order to hang herself from her $5.6 million luxury apartment in Chelsea. And she ended her life. Her name was Loren Scott. Let me retrieve this because you're all going to be looking at this. Her name was Loren Scott. Now, we never will really know if she suffered depression that caused that suicide. We never really know if she had a history of self-harm. But that aside, it would seem that even though she was surrounded by all that beauty, all that luxury, all that fame, and adored by millions around the world, it would seem that although she was satiated by all the world had to offer her, it just didn't satisfy. Actually, within hours of her death, Loren Scott's life was revealed to be one of an elaborate facade. Her business was at least $6 million in debt. Her fashion world friends and her celebrity clientele from around the world had no idea of the despair that she was in. And while the chasm between her marketed life and her actual life came as a shock to all those who found out this, to be honest, she is not really any different from the countless thousands of New Yorkers, the countless thousands of Londoners, Melbourneites, and dare I say, Sydneysiders, who secretly fake their sometimes fabulous lives. We want our toys, our distractions. We want our comforts and all the things the world and our society says that we ought to have. And the sad reality is that if we can't have them, then we'll settle for that thin facade of pretending to have them. We seek this kind of satisfaction in many different ways. Sometimes it's in work. Sometimes it's living our lives through our children. Sometimes it's in money or humanistic philosophies. We pretty much find this satisfaction through anything and everything the world has to offer. And more often than not, it's this quest is painful and hurtful. Now, this morning we meet a woman from the story we read in the Bible who's had an endless search for happiness and satisfaction in relationships. We don't know if her five husbands had died or divorced her. Whichever way it was, it must have really hurt. And it might have been for this very reason that Jesus sought her out. It's Jesus' love that puts his finger on the sorest spot of all. So when you encounter Jesus, it is always personal. That's the way he is. He doesn't want us to pretend. And for the next few moments, I'd say up to 20 minutes, the stopwatch isn't going, by the way, so get the stopwatch going and I'll finish on time. For the next few moments, I want you to consider your own soul and the quest that you're on. I want you to ask the hard questions, because if you don't ask those hard questions and pretend there's no problem, then it all falls apart eventually anyway. I don't want you to pretend there's no problem. Like a few years ago, I had the great joy, or not so, the infamous joy of eating a whole bunch of caterpillars in my soup. Like if you know my wife Vivian, she's very small, but she's very dangerous. So whatever she puts in front of you, no matter what it looks like, no matter what it smells like, no matter how you feel about it, you eat or you die. How do I eat those caterpillars floating there in the broth? I actually picked one up, chewed its head off to see, yeah, it's definitely a caterpillar. The way I did it was very simple. I pretended they weren't caterpillars. I pretended nothing was wrong. And in the end, I ate those caterpillars, one, two, three of them. They were probably poisonous. That's why I've got psychological issues now. But I pretended. I pretended there was nothing wrong and I ate them all. This morning, I don't want you to pretend. I don't want you to pretend that the product you have in life is sufficient. I want you to think hard, ask the hard questions, because there are questions that need to be answered. The problem is that if we do pretend, we end up shoving the same things into our mouth we always shove into our mouth. We end up shoving the same things into our pockets and filling our house with them as we always fill our house or fill our pockets with. Or we end up, if we keep pretending that there's nothing wrong, we end up slaving away serially at workplace after workplace, at job after job, thinking that somehow all this will bring satisfaction. The problem is that even though we think it will quench our thirst, even though we think it will do that, it will just end in thirst. It will just end in hunger. It will just end in a litany of endless dissatisfaction. So let me read this morning from the first part of today's story from the Bible. Jesus and his friends, his disciples, are traveling from Jerusalem through the countryside of Samaria. They arrive at the well outside a country village. Jesus rests there while the disciples go into the village to get some food. And I'm going to pick up the story from verse 7. Now I'm going to read it out, but you can follow on if you like in the Bibles in front of you. From verse 7, when a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into the town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said, "You're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you've got nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us this well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his flocks and herds?" Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." The woman said, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." Now that's a kind of bizarre conversation. They seem to be on very different wavelengths and almost speaking different languages. Sort of like they're speaking to one another and there's a barrier between them so that the words hit that barrier and fall to the floor. Now, we know that this woman has come to the well. And she meets Jesus there. You'll realize from verse 6 that it's noontime, it's the heat of the day. The only reason why a woman would come to that well when no one is there is because she doesn't want to see anyone. She doesn't want to speak to anyone. Maybe she's ashamed of the life she's lived. She's avoiding people, but she can't avoid Jesus. Jesus is there, alone and sweaty and thirsty from many hours of travel. Now, Jesus isn't looking for a top-up of his champagne. He's actually exhausted, he's parched, and on a hot day in need of a thirst-quenching sip of water. So Jesus asks for a drink. And after a short discussion, Jesus says something really surprising. When you look at verse 10, he says, "If you really knew who you were talking to, and if you knew the gift of God, you'd have asked him for living water." "What are you talking about?" she says. "You don't even have a bucket for the well. So where do you expect to get this living water? Who do you think you are?" And at this point, to be honest, we know as much as she does. And he says, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water I give will never thirst. Actually, it'll become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life." Now that sounds awesome. But what does it mean? Never thirst? He's obviously not talking about something physical, but something much greater. Now that idea of thinking about something greater than physical is something that does most Australians' heads in. We can't get our heads around what Jesus is talking about here because we in Australia are fixated on the physical. I've got an updated Maslow needs hierarchy here. And we Australians are fixated on the bottom half. Actually, that is true because we had friends come from America recently, and literally the first thing they actually said to me as they exited customs and I greeted them at that line, they said, "I've got to get internet. I've got to get internet." There was no, "Here, hold my kids." There was no, "I need a coffee." There was no, "G'day, it's great to see you." There was, "I need to get my phone on the internet or I'll die." We Australians are fixated on the physical. And on top of that, because when we're fixated on the physical, it's a beast that you keep feeding that will never get full. It's kind of like having a teenage son in your house forever. The example I got here is Sir Paul McCartney, who was interviewed about his success. He said this, and I won't do the accent. "It seems to me that no matter how famous, no matter how accomplished or how many awards you get, you're always still thinking there's somebody out there who's better than you. I should look at all my accolades and go, come on, Paul, that's enough. But there's still this little voice in the back of my brain that goes, no, 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 you could do better." Jesus is talking about fulfillment in life. Jesus says, "I can give you satisfaction in life." Can you imagine that? Fulfillment, satisfaction, living waters, living life the way it was meant to be. The gift of God, which ends up in eternal life. Now let's ponder that for a moment. We don't have satisfaction because nothing lasts in this life. We eat, we get hungry again. We drink, we get thirsty again. We build new houses, they eventually fall down. We buy new cars and buy new phones, and they're outdated and need upgrading by the time we get home. The things we learn are outdated by the time we get old. We may think we leave a lasting legacy, but after we're gone from this world, whatever it was, it turns to dust or it's a forgettable memory. We think of love and relationship, but even these good things are stolen away. We think we find satisfaction in something, but it never lasts because death and decay are ultimate. And they get in the way and they interrupt any chance we have. But Jesus is offering eternal life. He's offering life that is eternal. The only way to get eternal life is if God, the one who gives life, has a lasting relationship with us and with us forever. And Jesus is offering living water that gives eternal satisfaction. He's offering eternal life. Can you imagine that? By the time we get to verse 15, we see the poor woman completely misses the point. She still thinks that Jesus is talking about physical thirst. And Jesus, knowing this, just pushes the conversation on just a little bit further. Verse 16, Jesus told her, "Go call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she says. Jesus said to her, "You're right when you said you have no husband. The fact is you've had five husbands and the man you have now is not your husband. What you've said is quite true." "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you're a prophet." Then the woman goes on to say, "I know that Messiah, called Christ, is coming. When he comes, he'll explain everything to us." Then Jesus declared, "I who speak to you am he." Now what Jesus is doing here is trying to get her to face the truth. Face the truth, particularly that the things that we're chasing will not last. Like, do you remember when Facebook used to be cool? Who here's got Facebook? Admit to it. Come on, hands up. Who's got Facebook? Okay. Remember when Facebook used to be fun, where you update stuff, put photos, you say witty things that you expect people to like? The problem is that nowadays, I find Facebook really boring. Well, I admit, I find it really boring. And part of it's because I look at your feeds and you live boring lives, but But the problem is, no matter how cool it was, no matter how much fun it was, we eventually get bored. No matter how amazing it might seem, no matter how mind-blowing it might be, we will get bored. That's what we do as humans. No matter how cool it is, you get bored. That's the story of the countless celebrities out there. The scores of successful sports people, the super rich, who have realized what's the point in all the things we do? Because we get bored. And when finally we think we have everything, we still get bored. So what's the point? And we stupidly keep thinking and holding on to the idea the next thing will deliver us from it. That's what we think. The next thing will give us freedom from our boredom, will give us freedom from our dissatisfaction. But it all comes to nothing because nothing satisfies. That's the truth. That's the truth that we have to face this morning. Even though she hasn't found security in those relationships, Jesus wants her to admit that this pursuit of a seemingly good thing, which is the longing for love and the longing for relationship and security, she still has resulted in emptiness and hurt. Like this woman, many of us here have sought satisfaction in many things. Many have sought satisfaction in relationships. Maybe you've been seeking it in financial security or the accumulation of possessions or in living that kind of facade where you think and you want everyone to think everything is good. Everything is okay. I'm in control. Some people here may have even sought that satisfaction in religion. Now, the comedian Louis C.K. helps us understand our predicament here. He says this, underneath everything in your life, there is that thing, that empty, forever empty, that knowledge that it's all for nothing and that you're all alone. It's right down here in your gut. And sometimes when things clear away, you're not watching anything, you're in your car. The thing is, because we don't want the first bit of sad, we push it away with a little bit of phone, or a little bit of sex, or a little bit of food. You never feel completely sad or completely happy. You just kind of feel satisfied with your product. Then you die. Is that how you feel about your life? Satisfied with your product. Jesus is offering the gift of eternal life. He's offering living waters which well up into eternity, bringing endless satisfaction forever. How does he offer this true satisfaction? Well, when he died on that cross that we celebrated on Easter a couple of weeks ago, he died on that cross and rose again on the third day. He defeated death. And he now offers us eternal life. And like this woman, we need to accept his offer that gives eternal satisfaction. Because ultimately, we need to turn back to the one who gives life. That's how we get life. That's how we get satisfaction. Turn back to the one who gives satisfaction. If you look at the woman's immediate response from verse 19 onwards, in the end, the woman realizes there's nothing that she can do to satisfy her emptiness. That's why she says, I know when Messiah comes, he will give us everything. And that's when Jesus explains to her that he is the one she should be trusting and asking for this spiritual satisfaction. And from verse 27 onwards, we read that she finally comes good and goes absolutely nuts telling every single person about this Jesus who takes spiritually dead people and makes them alive, who takes spiritually empty people and gives them satisfaction. Remember this woman who came out at the heat of the day in noon to avoid people because of her shame, because of her emptiness, because of her lot in life. But when she met Jesus, when she accepted him, she was welled up with living waters for eternal life. that gave her confidence and gave her life to go tell others about this life that she now has. If you're onto a good thing, if you've realized you've found the meaning of life, wouldn't you go nuts like this woman? If you have got this eternal satisfaction, this thirst-quenching living water, why wouldn't you share it around? When you think of the people who you love, when you see them hurting, when you see the emptiness or the hollowness of their life, surely this message should not be hidden. What about those who don't yet know? When we know Jesus gives this brilliant offer of everlasting satisfaction, shouldn't we be telling others about this? Well, that's what we're doing this morning. That's what I do here each week. That's what we do as a church throughout all of May. We've got a litany of events and services that you yourselves can come to, you yourselves can bring people to, so that they can hear and know of this Jesus who brings satisfaction, even though they may be satisfied with their product in life. Maybe you're a Christian. Maybe you have this eternal satisfaction in Jesus, but you'd like some training. Well, we've already mentioned in the church news video, this Saturday, Daniel Shiesta is coming. He's coming to help train us and give us confidence to share this amazing message to everyone and anyone. Come along. Or maybe download the small group Bible study that you can run and do this next 6 weeks as your own small group. Train yourselves. Be confident in the gospel, because what we have is worth sharing. Maybe you come this morning and you're not quite sure about all these things I'm talking about, not quite sure about this Jesus person. Can I encourage you to make sure? But I don't believe that this journey you have to make in searching this Jesus out has to be done alone. So that's why we put on a Christianity Explained course in June. It's got everything you need to know about Christianity and about Jesus. I'd love you to attend. It's a short and relaxed course. It's an informative but informal course. 4 weeks, one and a half hours each time. That's all it takes. And you can make sure you know everything you need to know about Jesus. Maybe grab, way to sign up for that is grab this card. This one here. And the fourth box down, the checks box, says, I'd like to attend a Christianity Explained course. Or if that's too hard, get on the net, register on that site. But it is possible that you've heard me today. You've heard the story of what Jesus did and how he interacted with this woman at the well. Maybe you can identify in many ways with this woman. Perhaps you said, my life is empty and now I know why. Perhaps you're hurting and now you've discovered that there's possibility of healing and a new start. Jesus says, if anyone is thirsty, let them come to me and drink. So can I encourage you, come to Jesus. Turn back to him and take up his offer of the gift of eternal life. If that's you, then can I encourage you to grab this card again and right down the bottom, the checkbox halfway down the page says this, today I started a relationship with Jesus. If that is you, then I'd love you to come and see me in the welcome pavilion out there, the wedding reception hall that looks out there. And because I got a gift for you. It's not a cheap, tacky thing, but it's actually a really important gift that will help you take the next steps. So I'd love to meet you personally. I've got stacks of these. I'd love to give you one of these. And we can talk about what to do next and how to make the next step with Jesus. Because what Jesus is offering is eternal life. What he's offering is life-giving, spiritual fulfillment. He's offering living waters. And all I'm asking you this morning and this week and this coming year is to think about your life, to assess your life. Ask yourself the hard questions, because in the end, I don't want you to be satisfied with an inferior product in your life. Don't be satisfied with something that will end in death and dissatisfaction. I want you to come to know Jesus and know him forever. So take God's gift and soak it in. Soak it in while there's still time, and soak it in while Jesus is still offering it.